This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise Biz Bites, and I'm joined in the studio today by
Arvind Yuvraj
and Christine Wong.
We will be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with the show, 018 789 8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Four stories lined up for you today, including some podcast recommendations a little bit later on. We're going to be starting off with some AI stuff, starting off with how Chinese AI has beaten 15 doctors in a tumor diagnosis competition. What a weird competition to be having.
Yeah.
Then number two, AI could then be reading your handwriting to figure out your nationality. It's a little bit scary. Arvind, of course, brings some Netflix to the table with how they're beating broadcast and focusing on Bollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And then what tech giants really do with your data,
yeah,
before we give you some podcast recommendations. Before that, though, I don't know if you've been keeping track of this, of the whole T-Live debacle and what's going off there. So they released an official statement yesterday, and I've got the press release here. So if you missed it, I'll just quickly read this out. Lube Holdings, Sundaram Bahad, the company, has been informed that its application for a stay of the Court of Appeals decision in the appeals case brought by LaCafa has been dismissed by the Court of Appeal today. This was released yesterday, by the way. The company has instructed its lawyers to file for leave to appeal to the federal court against the Court of Appeal's decision given on the 27th of June, and it has been informed that the application had been filed yesterday. Its lawyers have been further instructed to make the necessary application to the federal court to maintain status quo, and the said application was filed early this morning. If you've been keeping track of that, of course, they were told to close down all establishments, mm-hmm, within Malaysia.
161.
And I, uh-huh, believe that Char Time have come forward and said, we will help you kind of retrench some of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how things go, though. Any updates, we'll keep you informed. Right, let's start off with this competition. This is the weirdest competition ever, right?
Yeah.
And we know that China are really pushing forward with the development of AI, and the progress they are making is clearly quite large. But this story kind of reads almost like a huge piece of propaganda. But I'll read it anyway, and then we can kind of judge for ourselves what we think of it.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's coming out of the Xinhua newspaper, which, if you don't know, is the mouthpiece of the Chinese government.
Government, yeah.
So this is what they said. As reported by Xinhua, the system defeated a team comprised of 15 of China's top doctors by a margin of 2-1. The AI BioMind was developed by the Artificial Intelligence Research Center for Neurological Disorders at the Beijing Tiantan Hospital and is another example of the long line of the technology analyzing images. Excuse me. When diagnosing brain tumors, BioMind was correct 87% of the time, compared to 66% by the medical professionals. The AI also only took 15 minutes to diagnose 225 cases, while doctors took 30. In regards to predicting brain hematoma expansion, BioMind was victorious again. See that word, victorious?
Mm.
As it was correct in 83% of cases, with humans managing only 63%. Researchers trained the AI, as we know, by feeding it thousands upon thousands of images from the Beijing Tiantan Hospital's archive. This has made it as good as diagnosing neurological diseases as senior doctors, as it has a 90% accuracy rate. So the executive vice president of Beijing Tiantan Hospital told Xinhua that he didn't care who won in the battle between doctors and the AI. And here's a little quote. I hope through this competition, doctors can experience the power of artificial intelligence. This is especially so for some doctors who are skeptical about artificial intelligence. I hope they can further understand AI and eliminate their fears toward it. There we go.
I don't know,
right?
This aside,
it's very strong language.
It is, but even this aside, we've seen this happen in other countries and,
yes,
like in other places before.
Not for the tumor recognizing, though. We've seen them operating
yet
on stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Where they're also more accurate and better than the human doctors and stuff like that. But I don't think, I don't know how to phrase this. I think that AI in the long run will become super helpful to doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I think because there's no way for a human being to have that much information in their heads. It's
right.
Just, it's at the moment, it's impossible. So you need to depend on AI. The same way we depend on like Google and the internet and stuff to get our information, doctors can sort of depend on AI to, diagnose a person better than they can. But the way this sounds is like they're pushing for something.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
The tone of the language.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a competition. All of these things kind of roll into one. It just, alarm bells were ringing in my head, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine somebody stood on a podium delivering this, saying, you know, the AI is much better and is this, that, and the other. It just worried me a little bit.
The thing is that with AI, I think that people always are concerned with whether or not they're going to take over, whether artificial intelligence will surpass us in ability. Mm. But I feel like the solution is not to compete against AI, but it's to work with it.
To yes. be supportive you know of what one I mean? Another.
Because, yeah. you know, with AI, you have, like Arvind said, you have the knowledge capacity, you have the databases and the speed of how fast they process information. But you have empathy and morality from humans. So if we can, it sounds so cliche, but if we can all work together to make the world a better place, you know, but like, and this really sounds, I mean, I don't even know which side it's on, but it's on a side. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like we have to be kind of careful with the way that we talk about AI, because to phrase it as a competition just seems so off to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the results are quite astounding. I mean, it's a big difference.
Of course.
And it really does just go to show the progress that they're making.
Yeah.
Right?
For yeah. Sure.
And also, it's when it comes to like China and Russia, normally people's antennas go up and they're like, oh, what's going on? You know, it's because of the different rules that they have and how flexible or how strict they are with certain things. But yeah. if you look at the experiment itself and even the competition itself, there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
It just shows how good AI is.
Agreed.
And how much the medical field can. So we were just talking about this last week when we said that our technology in medicine is far behind
Didn't
everything
you say
else.
It was something like 30 years behind or something?
Yeah, yeah. There's something that I read that said it was like 30 years or 20 years behind time, behind everything else that's been going on.
Yes.
So this is one way for them to sort of catch up, because if it's diagnosing people and sort of finding tumors better than doctors can, then they should work with it, because that's their job, right? To sort of get people better, faster, and more accurately. And if you don't have to cut into someone, then you don't have to cut into someone.
Okay. Let's stick with this theme then and move on to something else about AI. This is also really interesting.
Yeah. So I will just say quickly that this is an article from Fast Company, and it doesn't actually mention where these researchers come from in terms of like what association they're associated with. But there have been researchers that have created a machine learning algorithm that can break down a person's handwritten English text in order to determine if the writer is coming from one of five different countries: Iran, China, India, Bangladesh, and Malaysia. Yay!
Nice.
So the researchers created a data set of 100 people from these countries and had them write in English, with 500 lines done in total. With those handwritten lines, a tool called Cloud of Line Distribution, or CoLD, which I like, breaks down individual letters, measuring the straightness or the curviness of the text. The algorithm performed better at determining the nationality of the writer than the current existing method put to the same task, more than doubling the correct predictions for some countries. And what it was actually measuring is basically that when native Chinese writers use the Roman alphabet, they end up writing letters with straighter lines, because Chinese characters are usually formed with the combination of straight strokes.
Right.
But on the other hand, pun intended, writers originating from India and Bangladesh, I can't speak today, have curvier writing, as most of their scripts are cursive with more round shapes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's how it managed to kind of use that data to determine where it's from. If you look at the article in Fast Company, there are some diagrams as well that show you the difference in handwriting, which I think is pretty cool.
How did they arrive at the results for Malaysia then?
I think Malaysia was supposed to be a kind of neutral control group thing, because we've been using
I just thought
they might have been
waiting a while before the writing was finished, because people are always on the way, you know.
There's a sample here from Malaysia, and it just has you know that I adore you. Yeah, and it even sounds so Malaysian, because
right,
it starts
right.
with the you know.
You know?
You know that I adore you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it was designed to kind of be a relatively neutral thing, because Malay is also in like a Roman alphabet.
Yeah,
so it's not, you know. So I quite like that. But the researchers hail from India, China, and Malaysia as well. So that's quite nice. They propose that this technique would be useful for crime investigations, because police are increasingly turning to biometrics to solve crimes, and pulling out identifying information from handwriting could supplement other technology like face recognition software as well. In terms of computer vision researchers, previous research has tried to detect emotion, classify the gender, and determine the age of a writer, but otherwise not much work has actually been done trying to tease out more information from handwriting. So this is kind of interesting. The problem, though, as there always is with doing anything with technology, is that it doesn't address any of the privacy or civil rights concerns that might come from the applications of this and similar technologies. Mistakes that amplify existing biases in the training data could could, for instance, implicate the wrong person in a criminal investigation as well. But the first thing to do is that the researchers also still have to expand the small data set that they used to prove that coal is more than just an interesting project.
Interesting, though.
This really caught my attention because I've always been really fascinated by handwriting and you know, what it says about a person and how you can, you know, measure things like that. So I quite like this, and it's just fun.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, if it becomes like a standard thing that police use to find out where someone's from or whose handwriting this is, it's one of those things that like 30 years from now, we look back and go, how did people do this before this tech came up? You know, it's like someone sat there and studied like someone's handwriting, like someone was an expert at how people wrote stuff. And that would be like mind-boggling, you know?
Old-fashioned tech.
Old-fashioned tech, yeah.
Slapped together with new technology. Oh, interesting stuff. Right, we have a message already.
Yeah, this is from Raz, who just says, well, Malaysians have beautiful cursive handwriting because we had writing classes in school.
Thanks, Raz.
I will say that the sample in the article is not beautiful cursive handwriting. Mm. It's just normal print handwriting.
I actually met Raz at our Rocks event. So hello there, Raz.
Nice.
Yes, nice to put a face to the messages.
Yes.
Right, okay, we're going to take a short break. If you want to get in touch, don't forget, like Raz just had, you can get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break with some music. We've got some Red Hot Chili Peppers coming up with By The Way. When we get back, it's all about Netflix. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Friday has materialized. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, and I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
So we started off today's show with a couple of stories about AI. First one, we started off with how Chinese AI has beaten 15 doctors in tumor diagnosis competition, and how AI could read your handwriting to figure out your nationality. We've had a couple of messages during the break. What have we got, Chris?
Yeah, so this is from a WhatsApp number ending in 4371, and they say, just to chip into the conversation, the thing about artificial intelligence is that it is artificial, but the future seems to be promoting everything artificial from economy to intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think I'd agree with that in terms of like we are definitely moving towards being not, I wouldn't say more reliant on, but in integrating artificial intelligence more into our lives. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing yet.
Like we've said, you know, if it's going to supplement the knowledge that we have, I think it's great. If they're going to surpass us, not so great.
Not so much.
It's a bit frightening.
Yeah, a little bit frightening.
A bit.
Keep the messages coming. 018-789-8899 if you want to get us on WhatsApp or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Moving on to all things Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's your number one choice for TV viewing, apparently.
Yeah. So, I mean, we always talk about how much Netflix has grown. And, you know, over the last, 5 years, they've suddenly like exploded. And everyone's talking about Netflix. Everyone watches their shows on Netflix. But just how much is pretty interesting because these guys from Cohen & Co, they've done a study and they say that Netflix is now the most popular platform for watching entertainment on TV, ahead of traditional cable and broadcast television networks, as well as YouTube and Hulu.
I am not surprised at all.
Yeah, I am a bit because I thought YouTube would be higher than Netflix just because it's free.
Do we know like which demographics that they talk to for Netflix?
They say mostly millennials, but then they break it down to a couple of groups. So they did a survey on 2,500 US adults, and they asked which platforms do you use most often to view video content on TV, and Netflix captured the number one with 27%, followed by basic cable at 20%, broadcast at 18%, and YouTube at 11%.
Oh, YouTube's lower than broadcast.
No, but this is the thing. This is for adults. If you ask a younger group of people, I think it would be YouTube.
Teenagers.
Teenagers and below.
Yeah, they have what do they call them now? Screenagers.
What?
Seriously? Screen?
That's a thing? That's
a thing.
Gen Z and later are called screenagers.
You know, the funny thing is, I've actually noticed that my YouTube viewing over the last month or so has dramatically increased. And I kind of go through these ebbs and flows of what I'm watching, you know. Mm-hmm. But YouTube has generally taken the top spot recently.
And then Instagram has their new IGTV. Which is also pretty interesting. Yeah. So they broke it down. They say that when looking at adults 18 to 34, Netflix lead is even more dramatic because nearly 40% of those in the younger demographic said Netflix is the platform that they use most often to view video content on their TVs, well ahead of YouTube, which is only 17%, basic cable at 12%, Hulu at 7%, and broadcast broadcast TV at 7.5%. So in that demographic, Netflix is way higher. But the thing is, they sort of fell a bit short when it came to people who sort of leaned towards cable, but only by a little bit. So those people had like a, they preferred TV just by a few percent, just a small amount of people. But Netflix still came out on top. So in the second quarter of 2018, Netflix released about 452 hours of US original programming, up by 51% year over year, but actually slightly under the company's record output of 483 hours in quarter one of 2018. So it makes sense because they normally release like more content towards the beginning of the year. But that's still a huge increase from last year. It's 53%. Yeah, so it's more than half. That could also be because they are focusing on more countries. They have started to focus on India a lot more. So they did this this little experiment, I think, a couple of months ago, and they put out a show called Lust Stories. And it did huge in India, especially in like the Mumbai and the northern sides. So what they did now is they have a new show coming up called Sacred Games. I think it's a movie with one of the top actors there and stuff. And they said that they're going to pump a lot of money into Bollywood to sort of make original content for them.
I was hearing about this around about a year ago, I think. I have a friend involved in the media industry in India. He had been producing for a news outlet for a very long time and was headhunted by Netflix over there to help source content. He was telling me, watch out, India is gonna have a Netflix frenzy over the next year or so.
Yeah, because Amazon's already there, and they've been putting out, like, they've been signing a lot of stand-up comedians and doing a lot of like, original content and stuff. So Amazon's huge. They have, I think they're coming up with 10 new specials this year.
They're also offering a lot more money to the comedians than Netflix are over
in India. That's because they have more subscribers.
Correct.
So that's what Netflix is trying to do now by sort of upping their programs and stuff. So they want to compete with Amazon in that market. Both of them wanted to go into China, but the problem with China is their censorship is huge.
It's terrible.
Like, so many movies get banned, so many movies can't even get into China.
You know, you can't make a movie or talk about time travel in movies or TV shows.
So Back to the Future, the whole trilogy is banned in China.
Yeah, or any theme that has Deadpool didn't make it to China, the Deadpool 1 and 2.
That means also
spoilers.
I didn't say anything.
I was about to say Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
I didn't say anything. Ignore what I just said.
Did that show?
I'm saying that it should be banned if it's following those rules.
Yeah, so a lot of things don't do well. Even like Star Wars doesn't do well in China and stuff. So instead of focusing on China, which is a huge market for Hollywood, they're focusing on India, which is sort of opening up to these sort of themes. Because if you look at the thing they did before, Lust Stories, it's very taboo for the Indian market.
Is it?
Normally, it wouldn't fly so well with, you know, like families and stuff, and it wouldn't show in like cinemas. But because it's on Netflix, so a lot of the younger demo have sort of like gone towards and, you know, subscribed and stuff.
See, I think one of the big reasons as to why Netflix is still doing better than YouTube is that the kind of content that is serialized on YouTube comes in the form of YouTube Red mostly, you know, where you have to actually pay for that service in a similar way to Netflix, except that Netflix doesn't have a free option. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So no one wants to pay extra for YouTube Red, but people will pay straight up for Netflix. For simpler kinds of content.
If they find something that they that they like. Yeah.
Yeah, whereas YouTube you can just continue to use for free and find like other smaller things. But you don't get the same kind of like, I don't think you get the same kind of production value that Netflix can provide.
Yeah, which is interesting because they say that they put in less money than Hollywood, but they get the same sort of results. So they know how to sort of work with their budgets and all. Another interesting thing is I like to watch movie reviews from other countries. So if I can understand, so I'll watch like from Russia if it's in English, if the review's in English. And I've seen a lot of reviews for movies from India if they present it in English. And a lot of times they will say, we recommend you to see this, but see it in whichever language is native to them. So watch it in like Tamil or Telugu or Malayalam or something, which is interesting because it shows that they still sort of prefer content in their language.
Interesting.
Which is why Netflix is focusing on making language for the Indian market specifically.
Interesting.
I think that's great.
So the thing that they're coming up with is called Sacred Games. I think At the Movies had a review yesterday. It just aired yesterday. And I think the podcast should be up for Sacred Games.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, let's talk about, you know, more of a homebrew thing. If we talk about iFlix here, and you're talking about how people in their native countries prefer the TV shows and movies in their native language, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's break down Malaysia. Obviously, we have, you know, a bunch of different languages here. Mm-hmm. How well is Tamil language movies doing via iFlix here in Malaysia?
Ooh, I don't think they're doing well at all.
Why is that, do you think?
One, because it's a smaller market.
Right.
It's a super small market. So I think in the Indian population, I don't know how many people would actually tune in to watch these movies. And the other thing is the Malaysian market is super westernized.
Mm.
Our entertainment is very skewed towards English content. So we prefer content that is in English. And that's what our pop culture is made out of. So we see like Malay movies can do well. Some Chinese movies can do well. And if Tamil movie is like big or like super popular, then it'll do well. But it always has to come either from India or from somewhere else. Normally the local ones don't do as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, time for a short break. We've got some music coming up. Two songs back to back. Spencer Davis Group with I'm a Man, followed by the Ramones with Rockaway Beach. When we get back, final story of the day before we give you some podcast recommendations, and it's all about what tech giants really do with your data. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. It's our final story before we give you some podcast recommendations for the weekend that we think you might want to have a listen to. Of course, if you want to get in touch with this show, get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. What's this story all about then, Chris?
Yeah, so this is a list of a few things that tech giants really do with your data. So for all of those conspiracy tech theorists out there, I know you're out there because we have one of them on BFM every week. Mm-hmm. Matt Armitage, shout out. Anyway, not the point. The point is that if you were wondering what exactly some tech giants do with your data, this is a list of stuff that they actually have been confirmed to do. So the first thing is that your location is tracked, even if you don't allow it. For example, Facebook collects location-related information aside from your phone's GPS. It still tracks where you are through IP addresses and check-ins or events that you attend, which is pretty obvious. But Twitter also requires, quote-unquote, information about your current location, which they get from signals such as your IP address or device settings, which is apparently so that they can, and I quote, securely and reliably set up and maintain your account.
Hmm.
Why they need to know where you are to maintain your account, They do not say.
All they're doing, in response to the tweets based on the American elections for when people were tweeting out of Russia,
mm-hmm.
but saying they were actually in the US.
Perhaps, but it doesn't say exactly what that's referring to. The second thing is that companies also pass your data to affiliates. There's actually a lot of intra-group data sharing. For example, the data that dating app Tinder collects is shared with other members of the Match group, which includes other dating sites like OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, and Match.com.
Huh.
Yes, they say that it does this for maintenance, customer care, marketing, and targeted advertising, and to also remove users who violate their terms of use. So presumably, if you are rude on Tinder, you might be kicked off OkCupid.
Also, on the flip side, I assume that once you've signed up for Tinder, you are more than likely listed on some of the other websites as well.
I'm not actually sure about that. I don't know if they would list you, but I feel like if you then signed up for another one of those sites, they might maybe be able to match you better.
Right, interesting.
Who knows? But also, LinkedIn as well was bought by Microsoft in 2016. And according to their privacy policy, they receive data about you when you use some of the other services provided by us or our affiliates, including Microsoft. You're also bound by the third-party terms as well. Amazon says that they may share information with third parties, but they also say that users should carefully review the third party's privacy statements and other conditions of use as well as Amazon's. With Apple products, your personal data is shared with companies who provide services like information processing, extended credit, and assessing your interest in their products and services. Mm. However, it's kind of weird that you not only have to read their terms and conditions, but you now have to read like 10,000 other terms and conditions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth, which I find very peculiar, Tinder specifically collects your gyroscope data. Not sure how to pronounce that word, but it's the thing that measures the angle that you're holding your phone at. It also collects data from your phone's accelerometer for measuring movement, as well as the data from your phone's compass. It doesn't, however, say exactly what that data is used for.
I would not like to guess why. Well,
I genuinely have no clue how that could be useful at all, but apparently they do that. So let's move on.
I mean, yeah, it's Tinder.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But if you have any clean suggestions, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Moving on to number five.
I'm scarred for life. moving on to number five. Facebook also keeps your deleted searches. Their data policy states that while your search history can be deleted at any time, the log of that search is only deleted after 6 months. Facebook also tracks you, even after even if you're off the app. According to its data policy, it works with advertisers, app developers, and publishers who can send information about your activities off Facebook through something called Facebook Business Tools. This happens whether or not you have a Facebook account or if you're even logged into Facebook. I don't know how Facebook can track you when you're not even a part of them. But Facebook. Number 7, LinkedIn scans your private messages. In case you thought private messages were supposed to be private, it's not. It uses automatic scanning technology on the messages according to its privacy policy. Twitter as well uses data about whom you have communicated with and when, but not the content of the communications to better understand the use of blah, 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 blah. Number 8, if you are under 18, your parents should have read the terms and conditions with you. That's part of their terms and conditions, is that you should be reading them with your parent. Apple specifically says that children under the age of majority should review this agreement with their parent or guardian to ensure that the child and parent or legal guardian understand it. But let's be real, no one actually reads those.
Yep.
And lastly, don't use your iPhone to make nuclear weapons.
Okay.
Oh. Specifically, yeah, Apple has a line in its UK terms of use telling customers to not use their products for any purposes prohibited by United States law, including without limitation, the development, design, manufacture, or production of nuclear, missile, or chemical, or biological weapons. So that's what they've used.
I think other than the gyroscope data, I knew pretty much all of this, right?
Yeah, because at this point, it's like not surprising. I mean, it's always frightening. It's still a bit frightening how much they collect, but it's not surprising.
When you hear it in a list like that.
Especially. Yeah, in a list like that. But it's not surprising that they have this much data on you. Mm. And at this point, I'm like, okay, if you have so much data, then at least show me advertisements that mean something to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like show me content that I actually want to see.
Might as well.
Yeah, you might as well, because you know so much about me. Mm. Don't show me things that is like completely irrelevant, then I'm going to be offended. Mm. Like, is this how much you know? Like, we've spent so many years to get. Yeah, is this how much you care?
Yeah, I think for Facebook and Twitter and even LinkedIn, I kind of knew already, but not all the stuff that's come out about Tinder in this article from the BBC, by the way. I had no clue. Genuinely no clue. I didn't even really cognize that it was part of that whole group and that it would be sharing information with that whole group as well. That had never occurred to me.
Yeah. Also, the agreement stuff where they say like you should sit down with the parent, they know it's not happening. Like,
for sure.
No one does
for sure.
It. They should just break it down to like a 10-step thing if they actually want people to look at the agreements and stuff. Just break it down like when you turn on your phone, then you have to go through the hassle of going through like step 1.
Yeah.
Do you agree to this? Yes, no. Step 2, do you agree to this? Yes, no. Step 3, do you want to turn on your location, device, whatever?
I mean, they
do that,
but then it, according to the article, even if you say no to sharing your location, it still tracks you anyway. So there's almost no point.
All right, let's take a break then. Let's have some music from Blur. Let's get woken up a little bit. Coffee and TV from Blur coming up. Mm. When we get back, when we come back, some podcast recommendations for stuff that we think you might want to have a listen to over the weekend. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up, but as usual on a Friday, we've got some podcast recommendations that we think you might want to check out over the weekend to keep your knowledge up to speed. What have we got?
Yeah, so the first one, not to toot my own horn, but it's an interview that I did. It's the podcast is called Media Savvy CEOs, and I talked to Mark Lowry, who is the managing director of Hongbao Media and also a former CNBC Asia anchor. And I was kind of terrified, but it was a really, really great interview. It's all about how CEOs can understand how to engage with the media and why it's actually so important and how it can actually grow your business value as well. So it was a great interview. Go check it out.
All right. I've got one that aired on Tuesday at 10 o'clock. It was with Audrey, and she spoke with Ben Hogue, who's from Goodyear, Malaysia. The topic is called From the Moon to Malaysian Roads. Did you know that Goodyear was the first tire on the moon, and it was used on one of the moon rovers?
Nice.
There you go. So Goodyear is one of the world's leading tire companies with operations in most parts of the world and one of the most recognized brand names. But what does Goodyear mean to Malaysians and vice versa? Audrey spoke with Managing Director of Goodyear Malaysia, Ben Hogue, about Goodyear's plans for Malaysia and how they're to fit into tire giants' grand plans for sustainable growth.
Isn't Goodyear like the default tire brand that when you think of when you go like, I want to change my tires,
yes.
What tires? Oh, Goodyear.
Yes.
I hope it's been a good year for Goodyear.
It has. It has been many good years for Goodyear.
Mm.
Shall we move on?
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to Matt's Plane. So Matt's Plane earlier today at 10 a.m. So Jeff and Matt spoke about the what if we all needed a license to surf the internet. So sort of like a driving license with different tiers depending on your age, and you get access to different parts of the web. And if you do things like bullying and trolling and all the bad stuff online, then you get a fine and renewal of your internet is at risk. So is that a dream? Is that a nightmare? How would that work? So they both discussed that on Matt's Plane.
Smart idea, I think.
Yeah, I quite like that.
Right. Don't go anywhere, though, because coming up, as usual, after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay with Christopher Ong, who's the Managing Director for Malaysia and Brunei for DHL Express. With the rapid expansion of the e-commerce sector, how are logistics players maintaining their competitive edge? The Breakfast Grill caught up with Christopher Ong, the Managing Director, to discuss their growth strategy. That's coming up after 1 o'clock. But if you missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play and listen back at your leisure so you can listen to these four stories that we had for you today. We started off with a story about how Chinese AI has beaten 15 doctors in a tumor diagnosis competition.
And then we talked about how AI could also read your handwriting to figure out your nationality if you are from Malaysia, Iran, China, India, or Bangladesh.
Mm. And then we spoke about how there's research that shows that Netflix has beaten broadcast for certain demographics and how Netflix is also focusing on Bollywood now.
And then we talked about nine things that tech giants really do with your data.
It's not pretty.
No.
Right, folks, have yourselves a lovely weekend. Of course, we will be back on Monday, same time, same place. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Arvind Yuvaraj and Christian Wong, this has been Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9. Bit of Tame Impala next. Why won't you make up your mind on BFM 89.9?
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.